I just checked our homepage just to make sure I haven't missed any big stories. J.R. Smith stung by hornets at college golf tourney is a headline. Like, literally, he was stung by hornets?
He was attacked by bees, Zach. I don't know how we got to ever doing anything but starting this podcast with not J.R. Smith getting stung by bees.
Should I read this story?
Yeah, this is how this starts. Go ahead.
All right, let me read the story.
Zach Lowe covers basketball for ESPN.
AP coming out swinging in the lead. J.R. Smith stepped into a hornet's nest in his first college golf tournament.
There it is.
And it had nothing to do with his high score.
Oh!
Was literally stung by hornets.
Yeah. No, Zach, we live in a world where J.R. Smith playing golf for a college team and a bee attack, it's not cracking like the top 10 things of stuff we got to talk about in the NBA. That is how wild this particular offseason has been.
Are we doing the podcast right now?
I think we are. I think we're doing a podcast.
Wow. J.R. Smith, I tried to turn it into a positive. This might be your equivalent of a flu game.
Depending on what team you root for, this NBA offseason has kind of felt like being attacked by very angry insects with a swarm of headlines that can make you want to go jump into a river. But real games begin on Tuesday night, and for all the questions we still need answered, the upshot now is that the list of plausible contenders is deep, deeper than you may have thought. So today, we mine the brain of Zach Lowe to determine who should finish atop each conference. And then we make a beeline to a thrilling WNBA Finals, where the buzz is around two all-time greats who are vying for one more title. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, October 15th. This is ESPN Daily. Zach, I just want to talk to you about J.R. Smith and bees. It is a world, a dimension that is far friendlier, far more whimsical. I miss NBA stories being as easy to digest as that one. But instead, we live in a world where I get an alert at like 11-something p.m. on a Wednesday night, and it says Kyrie Irving is live on Instagram. And I'm wondering what your reaction was when you got that alert.
I was on my couch watching crunch time of the WNBA Finals, Game 2.
Yes.
Which features maybe my all-time favorite basketball player in Diana Taurasi. And I was struck by a professional obligation that I should, even though I am not an Instagram user, I should try to find a way to figure out what was going on Instagram Live. And I saw a couple of tweets transcribing his comments.
Nobody's going to take the power away from me that I have for speaking on these things, you know. And don't believe that I'm retiring. Don't believe that, you know, I'm going to give up this game for a vaccine mandate or staying unvaccinated. Don't believe any of that shit, man. Like,
I just made the decision. I'm out for this. I'm watching the WNBA Finals. If necessary, I will catch up later.
I cannot tell you how wise a decision that was.
I think I have the gist of what was said, and that's good enough for me. And the game was awesome, and Brittany Griner was awesome, and it's 1-1, and so that was my primary takeaway. I mean, look, the story will evolve as it evolves. It is out of my control, Pablo. I can't do anything about it.
But here is what you can do for us. Because you talk to GMs all the time, Zach. You do this in the run-up to the tip-off of the regular season, especially. You can tell us how good the Nets will actually be without Kyrie Irving. How good is this team really?
They can win the championship. I mean, they have James Harden. If you just pretended that they never had Kyrie Irving and you just sort of imagined a team with James Harden and Kevin Durant and role players who fit them really well, you would be like, oh, that team is awesome. But I really would like to see that team play basketball. They're probably going to win 55 games and contend for the championship. And I think with Kyrie, they were clear favorites to win the title. Clear, yes. Overwhelming, not close. Without him, I think they're probably co-ish favorites with the Bucks, and obviously their margin for error injury is down to basically zero. I think at some point he'll get vaccinated and they will return to being overwhelming favorites, but I think it's now them, Milwaukee, and because it's not just losing. Like, we imagine this team, imagine if they just had Harden and Durant.
Mm-hmm.
in what was Kyrie Irving's roster spot, that team would have like role players who could help them. Now that roster spot is a zero. So I it does affect them.
So I want to get your take on the Kevin Durant end of things here, simply as there is this conversation now that seems to indicate that Kevin Durant is the best player on the planet. Is it that simple to you, Zach?
You know, I think coming off of last year's playoffs when Giannis dubbed him the best player on the planet and he almost single-handedly beat the team that ended up winning the championship and had just one majestic two-way game after another. It wasn't just the scoring. It was the manner of scoring, all the different ways he was doing it, the defense, the rebounding, the passing. I do think Giannis is going to make a run at it. I think the guy in L.A., every time we count him out of these discussions, is like leading the MVP race in January and February. So I'd be very careful just excluding him from this. But I think Kevin Durant walks into this season as not a consensus number one player, because there's never a consensus on this as long as LeBron is in the league. But I think if you polled 30 GMs, I would guess 18 to 20 would vote KD as the best player.
Yeah, okay. So Giannis then. Zach, I'm watching the preseason and I'm watching the Bucks, and I'm seeing Giannis pull up behind the three-point line and drain threes. And I'm wondering if that version of Giannis is a version of Giannis that you expect to see when actual real games start.
I feel like we've had this conversation, not you and I, but the NBA Cognoscenti, like every 27th Milwaukee game, he'll walk up and hit a bunch of three. Oh, whoa. Imagine if. Oh, my God. And like he has gotten to be a better three-point shooter. Maybe there will be a day where that's actually a shot that convinces defenders like, oh, I got to run him off the line. And then it really is all over. I just am not as interested in that as I am in the floaters, the jump hooks, the getting to his spots, all the stuff that he started to show more comfort with the last three rounds of the playoffs, all the stuff that's like, oh, you put DeAndre Ayton on me? I'll solve that in a game and a half. Jay Crowder, you're on me? You got no shot. Oh, I got a switch. I have a point guard on me in the post. This is way easier for me now than it was two seasons ago because my footwork's better. I have more options. You send help from here, I know what to do. You send help from there, I know what to do. I have more shots in my bag. That's the kind of stuff that is more interesting to me.
So in terms of what's most interesting to you from their postseason run where they win the title last year, even beyond Giannis, though, what did you learn about this team that you didn't know that now informs how good you think they're going to be now?
Number one was finally, after years of resisting it, they leaned into diversifying their defense and say, we just can't play the same way. The other thing is, to me, the half-court offense has always been their biggest question. For all the focus on their defense, it was their half-court offense that melted down against Toronto in 2019. It was their half-court offense that couldn't do anything against Miami when they got embarrassed in the bubble. And it was their half-court offense that five games into that Brooklyn series was about to get Mike Budenholzer fired because it was completely malfunctional. Malfunctional is not a word. It was completely malfunctioning. And they sort of turned it around to some degree. They definitely discovered something about like what the hierarchy of ball handling and skill set should be. And that revolves around how Giannis plays and how Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday play off of him. So they discovered something about that ecosystem and how it should look. But I think they discovered like just enough to eke by a wounded Nets team, just enough to eke by, or maybe not eke because Giannis was hurt, as was Trae Young, but get by a Hawks team that frankly was ahead of schedule and get by a Suns team that really no one expected to be in the finals before the season. Like, that's the area where I think they still have a lot of room to grow. Not only that, it sounds weird to say about a champion, they might have to grow significantly in that area to repeat as champion. Repeating is really hard and the competition is really good, particularly Brooklyn.
Yeah, I mean, Zach, the Jrue Holiday thing, I mean, what he did in the postseason defensively and then him going immediately and winning a gold medal and all of that in Tokyo, how do you take stock of what Jrue Holiday means to this team now as the third piece of what has grown into an actual big three in Milwaukee?
He's one of the 10 best defensive players in the NBA and has been for quite some time. And he just sort of found his way to be the second side pick and roll option, to become the primary ball handler when teams tried to put bad defensive players on him, and then to defend like all hell. He's just a really good basketball player who, you know, we've all known he's good for this long, but playing for a champion raises your profile. And obviously, one of the two iconic plays of those finals was him stripping Devin Booker and then throwing the most audacious lob pass in NBA history, considering the circumstances, and having Giannis throw it down.
Booker the drive, backed away and stolen by Holiday. Then Phoenix has to foul. And a pinnacle ball throws it down.
So you just described one of the most audacious plays in NBA history, Zach. I am still haunted by, I think, the opposite, which brings up Ben Simmons, which brings up the fact that you're wearing a Sixers cap in front of me right now on this call, which is offensive, to be honest. And I have to ask you what you think these Sixers look like if Ben Simmons is not in their lineup. How good can this team be? Are they the third best team in this conference? What are they to you without him?
I think they're at grave risk of being in the play-in tournament in the East, because I think the top six in the East, which includes Philadelphia in theory at least, is really, really strong. And it's not hard to fall out of that if one or two bad things befall your team. And we're obviously talking about a very bad thing befalling your team. And you can talk to him about Tyrese Maxey. Like, I'm excited about Tyrese Maxey. He stepped up when they needed him in the playoffs, in particularly in game six, I think it was, against Atlanta. Shake Milton's like seems exciting. I like the idea of Shake Milton. Every fifth game, that version of Shake Milton appears. And you're like, ah, oh, that's Shake Milton. And then he like falls out of the rotation for four games. Matisse Thybul is solid. The Springer kid they drafted is interesting. Like, all those names are interesting. The thing with interesting young guys is our brains tend to remember that one out of every fifth game when they showed all their potential for eight consecutive minutes, and not the other four when they were like young guys struggling in the NBA. You can criticize Ben Simmons for everything he isn't as a player. What he is a really good, consistent defensive player, like one of the best in the league, and just a really good all-around player who generates threes for them. And to go from that to a zero for the roster spot and then replacing it with a bunch of unproven guys, I think that's a bigger hit than some people are realizing it's going to be for Philly.
So when you evaluate the Sixers, are you seeing this through the lens of there's going to be a part replacing Ben and they will be X, Y, or Z? Are you expecting Daryl to swing something?
I'm expecting there to be a trade because I just think there has to be. I don't think there is any other solution. I mean, Ben Simmons is back. Let's be optimistic and assume he plays.
Let's
be even more optimistic and assume he plays well and the team is pretty good. I still think it's too far gone for there to be the real kumbaya reunion. Let bygones be got bygones. We're a contender again. You know what? I do want to play with Joel Embiid. You know what? This is the place for me. I just don't see that as happening. So
no,
even
Hakuna Matata died in the press conference after game seven against the Hawks.
So I think eventually there will be a trade and the Sixers and Daryl Morey will have to decide at some point, and maybe it depends on how the season is going, maybe it doesn't. Are we really going to hold out for the home run swing? Are we prepared to spend the whole season holding out for the home run swing? And I probably shouldn't use the term holding out considering what it implies on the other end. But or if there's a B deal, a B minus deal, that's like pretty good. It's not Damian Lillard. It's not Bradley Beal. It's pretty good. Helps our team now. Helps our team later. Do you do that deal? And I think at some point they will face that decision. But a trade is going to happen now, later. I just don't know when.
So before we move on to a team that's actually like a stable universe of particles and not the chaos theory of the Sixers, Zach, what do the Sixers have in front of them in terms of opportunity here, realistically? Because we've described a world in which the Nets and the Bucks are ahead of them. I feel like all in is the only way to go. But if you're going all in with this team, what is the ceiling on it?
That's what hurts, because the Nets, in theory, with a full season of those three guys, got better. The Nets, maybe with just a full season of Harden and Durant, got better. The Bucks, by virtue of exercising the demons, they're better. The Sixers, at best, kind of stayed the same, except their second best player doesn't want to be there. Like, that seems kind of bad. And that seems like the very, very, very best version of your season is it's the second round of the playoffs. It's game four at home. We're down 2-1 to the Bucks or the Nets. We're within five in the fourth quarter. The crowd's going crazy. Oh, and they just went on a 10-0 run and our season's basically over.
Yeah. Thanks, Zach. That's I appreciate being preemptively haunted on October 15th at this point. But the team that haunted me at the end of last season, of course, was the Atlanta Hawks. And I'm wondering, Zach, when you're going and doing the power rankings here, Nets, Bucks, Sixers, massive question mark. Who is that team after? Is it the Hawks? Is it someone else?
The Hawks are my pick to finish third in the East in the regular season. I think the Hawks are legit. I don't really even understand why people think that they were a fluke last year. Now, did they get further than expected? Absolutely. But they, I don't know why. Maybe it's because the players are not big known names, but the Hawks did what they did at like 75% health the entire time. They had key players injured all season, including in the playoffs, including in the Sixers series. Most of their players are young and should keep getting better. Their team makes sense on paper. And the same thing I said about the Bucks, about like, oh yeah, we were this good. We accomplished this. Like, we showed up and did the dirty work when it mattered. The same applies to them. Now, I think the Hawks will be better this year than they were last year. That doesn't mean they'll get as far in the playoffs. Like, that's the thing people need to get their heads around. They can be a better team and lose one round earlier, which I think is actually their most likely outcome. But they're my pick for number three in the East.
So what Trae Young is at this point, Zach, and I'm a person, by the way, who has gotten tweets from Trae Young's dad, Ray, rightfully so, just killing me for saying that Ben Simmons and Matisse Thybulle would put Trae Young in a cargo pocket and zip it shut. That didn't exactly happen in the playoffs. I must admit, apologies to Ray Young. But what is he realistically to you after what we saw him do, which is own the postseason at times?
He is an absolute offensive superstar, and he was that for all of last season. I think the question people had was, how is this going to hold up defensively in the playoffs? He is a bottom whatever defender in the NBA. He's one of the weakest defenders in the NBA. And we've seen how hard it is to hide a guy like that in the playoffs in the wrong matchup. They just didn't run into that kind of matchup. The Knicks were a perfect matchup for them in that regard because they were just not equipped to attack him in that way, nor were the Sixers in the end. He is the fulcrum of a really good offense, and that's not going away.
All right, Zach, after the break, you've mentioned the apex predator named LeBron James. I want to get to him and the Western Conference coming up.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Zach, I want to look at the teams you have at the very top of the West, and it seems like the one at the very top should be obvious, but I want to get to what's not obvious about the Lakers and LeBron and Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook and Carmelo, et cetera. What are people not getting about this team that sticks out to you, do you think?
I think people get it. As soon as they got Russ, everybody understood the questions were, number one, what is he doing to be of use when LeBron has the ball? Number two, are they going to play Anthony Davis at center more because their shooting just took a big hit? And number three, who are the other two players in that Anthony Davis at center lineup? Can any of the shooters play defense? Can any of the defenders shoot? The injuries they've already suffered to Trevor Ariza and Talen Horton Tucker are a big, big deal in terms of building out those lineups. Those are probably the two best defensive players among that group of sort of secondary wing guys that could fill out those lineups. And they're both already injured. Talen Horton Tucker is the most important young player on their team. He's only 20. So those injuries are a big deal, and they have not looked good in the preseason. That may or may not mean anything. I'm not sure even what I am about the Lakers. I'm mildly optimistic, I guess, maybe, but they may have more work to figure out than I thought, because you tend to get caught up in all this noise and you're like, wait, they have LeBron and Anthony Davis. Like, that solves all the noise. If those guys are healthy, all the noise doesn't even matter.
But hold on a second, because LeBron James now, the guy who is resenting Kevin Durant, Giannis being the best player in the world.
Hashtag Wash King,
Zach. Do you expect LeBron to care about this regular season in a way that we have not seen LeBron care about a regular season in a while now?
He cares about the regular season in different ways almost every season. I think, you know, he's tried to get MVP before every year. His last year in Cleveland, he played all 82 games specifically, I think, in part at least, to try to get MVP. He likes to play. Obviously, he's going to save the A-plus effort on defense and everything and the post-ups that take a lot of. He's going to save that for the playoffs. But I do think he seems in his public comments to be excited as a problem solver, as a chess master, to be excited by everyone saying, oh, the spacing, you know, what's Russ going to be doing? How are you going to make that work?
When I decided to go to Miami, the first thing they said was LeBron and D-Wade don't mix. There's no way they could play together. They're too ball dominant. I mean, we know what happened with that. You make it work. You figure it out. I know what Russ brings to the table. He know what I bring to the table. And when you got a unicorn like AD, you know, he fits into anything.
And maybe that all those concerns end up being proven correct. I think a lot of them will end up being proven correct. But he's itching at the chance to say, you guys know who I am. Like, I see you guys are watching on TV and think you understand what's going on. I see 10 steps ahead of all of you. I see it all. I see all the picture. I see all possible outcomes for every possession in my head at all times. I'll figure it out.
You know, he is Dr. Strange seeing 14 million possibilities.
The most important overarching story in the West is that Jamal Murray is injured and Kawhi Leonard is injured. And if we're talking about, well, the Lakers are probably the favorite in the West and we have all these caveats about their team, I think it should be stated up front. To me, if everyone were healthy, I think the Clippers and the Nuggets would be my number one and two in the West in some order.
Wow. Wow. Okay, wait. So without the Nuggets, without the Clippers, because of those injuries that you mentioned, who is number two in the West to you? Is it the Suns? Because, hey, they made the finals and they're good. What are we not getting there?
The Suns are good. And they did make the finals. Those are accurate statements. I still think I would lean Utah just because of the continuity and the depth. And yes, they did not get as far as the Suns did in the playoffs last year. So the Suns had a quote-unquote better season. And the way the Jazz got humiliated on their home floor by the Clippers blowing a giant lead and it was a 50-point swing in game six of that series.
One of the all-time great comebacks in NBA playoff history. Down 25 in the second half. And the LA Clippers will win their fourth straight game in this series.
Totally embarrassing. I don't even want to hear about the injuries. Injured as an embarrassing loss for the Jazz.
Yes.
I just think what they did in the regular season was so powerful and such a statement in terms of just one of the greatest victory margins of all time, one of the greatest offensive net rating, one of the greatest net ratings of all time, all that stuff. I think you have to give them the benefit of the doubt.
So that benefit of the doubt, though, does that extend beyond the regular season? Because we're picking standings here, but then
no.
The postseason starts,
no.
And then how does your mindset shift?
No, does not extend beyond the regular season. The Jazz, take it as a compliment. Like 2 years ago, I said or wrote, I can't remember which, like I'm done being like amazed by James Harden putting up 55 in Charlotte in the regular season. Like, I don't care anymore. I get it. You're amazing. Show me what you do when the chips are down in an elimination game in the playoffs. That's all I care about anymore. Utah, oh my God, your margin of victory. Oh, look at how Rudy Gobert is like, they don't allow any threes or shots at the rim because their defense is so sound because of Rudy Gobert. Look at their stats for 50 games. I don't care anymore. I don't care. It's very nice. It's all that stuff is very cute. All that matters now is, hey, the conference finals started. Are you in it? Or did you lose again in a way that makes you disappointed about yourselves? It's not disappointment being foisted from the outside. It's not unfair criticism. They leave the playoffs every year internally thinking we lost earlier than we should have, or we lost in a way that is dispiriting. Even if we lost to a team that was as good or better than us, like the Warriors a few years ago, the Rockets a few years ago, we feel like we failed to show up at our peak selves. Like, I don't want, so that's what I want to see. Did you show up as your peak selves? Are you in the conference finals? That's all that matters now.
So the guy who used to get that knock, of course, all the time was Chris Paul. And I just want to hit the Suns real quick here, Zach, because Chris Paul seems to have gotten over that. He makes the NBA finals. It seems like that idea of him is dead and gone. What is the ceiling on the Suns team to you?
Ceiling on the Suns team is you make the finals again. I'm not going to pick them to make the finals. I would not. But you're telling me about their ceiling? Like, I don't think they could beat the healthy Nets or Bucks in the finals. But I don't look at anyone as presently constructed right now in the West and say the Suns can't beat that team 4 out of 7 in the playoffs. Again, I won't pick them to make the finals. There are teams I would pick over them. But ceiling is for sure finals.
So then this brings me to the Warriors, Zach. And I don't know if there's a bigger variance among opinions on how good a team could be than the Golden State Warriors, a version of the Warriors that is going to get Klay Thompson back. When do they say?
Christmas has been thrown out in the media, maybe before, maybe after. I'm just ballparking late December and hoping for the best. I'm hoping it's like December 10th and, you know, he's coming out of the tunnel. There he is.
So what does a version of this Warriors team with Andrew Wiggins vaccinated and Klay Thompson coming out of the tunnel, there he is, around wintertime, what are we getting here?
I'm less concerned with wintertime than springtime. I think they need to be able to hold the fort as Klay is out and then as Klay comes back and works off 2 years worth of rust, 2 years worth of two of the most devastating injuries in sports. He's not just going to come back and like start dropping 25 every single game. Maybe he will because he's Klay and he's just unbelievable, but I doubt it. If they can get out of the play-in and be in the top six with 2 or 3 weeks left in the season and start getting their groove going, I think they can be a really dangerous team. I think their ceiling is finals too, and it's less likely because they have a lot more questions to answer, but there's a version of this team, if Steph and Draymond and Klay are healthy by whatever standards Klay can be healthy this year, that is really, really good. And I think part of it is they spent last year trying to do two things at once. We're going to try and win, but we're also going to try to develop our young guys and do some experimenting. This year, they're just trying to win.
So before I let you go here, Zach, you are obsessive about League Pass. You have these rankings. There are a bunch of teams, obviously, we did not mention in this conversation due to time and due to restraints on my sanity. Who do you want to shout out as a team that our listeners need to go and watch?
Well, Charlotte is the obvious answer. We're all excited about Charlotte. Miles Bridges, he's going to humiliate someone with a dunk so badly that that person is going to retire on the spot. They're going to run a lot. They have LaMelo. They're going to play zone. So that's the obvious one. Let me try and give you a couple like non-obvious ones. I think the Grizzlies, Ja Morant is a show. That dude is a show. He is out for blood when he tries to dunk on people. He's a guy that his teammates love to play with because he's unselfish in terms of both getting off the ball and passing. I think he's wonderful to watch.
Wait, Zach, let me ask you this because I feel like it's contractually obligated for me to do this with you at this point. I have to ask where the Knicks slot into all of this, man.
I think the Knicks, I'm optimistic about the Knicks. I think the Knicks are going to be good. I mentioned how the top six in the East is really, really good. And that means getting out of the play-in for everybody who's not in that group is going to be tough. If you assume one of those top six, let's call it Philly, falls out of the top six due to certain circumstances, then you have to pick like, okay, who do you think is the team most likely to break in from the bottom and escape the play-in? I'm taking the Knicks by a hair over the Bulls. I think the Knicks qualitatively are going to be really good. Not really good, just good.
Zach Lowe, as you are now swarmed by very rationally minded Knicks fans for saying that, I thank you for joining me, man.
Always a pleasure.
All right, after the break, our LaChina Robinson takes us inside one of the best WNBA finals we can remember.
Shopping for Mother's Day is usually a challenge because you people wait until the last minute. But Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day. Whether you're shopping for your sister's first one or for your fashionista mom who likes to make a statement, Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate with them both. You can shop by price anywhere from $25 and under to, say, $100 and below. You can also sort by category like fragrance, handbags, and more. Or gift lists, like for the mom who has everything, or even pre-wrapped gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, and Samsung smart TVs. So, what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th, and it'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder.
LaChina Robinson, we are talking to you about tonight's Game 3 of the WNBA Finals, but I want to start here really with the end, I mean all of Game 2, honestly, because you were there. You were there to watch the Phoenix Mercury tie the Chicago Sky after winning in overtime. The series is now 1-1, so I'll just tee it up to you. What did you see? What was that like?
Wow, Pablo, it was one of the most memorable moments I've had covering WNBA playoffs, WNBA finals. There were 14,000 screaming fans in the building. You can barely hear yourself think in stretches of the game. I'm sitting next to Sue Bird, getting her analyst perspective on it. I mean, there really couldn't have been a better seat in the house.
Taurasi in the corner finally hits from downtown.
But wow, just really impressed with Phoenix's fight. You know, this is a Mercury team that on paper, very shorthanded for the WNBA Finals. They lost Kia Nurse to an ACL. They just got Sophie Cunningham back in the lineup. And it's a team that, quite honestly, has to rely on their big three heavily. And that's Diana Taurasi, Brittany Griner, and Skylar Diggins-Smith. And I thought it was a family affair, if you will. Everyone on that team did their part to get the victory in overtime, starting with Brittany Griner's 29 points. I mean, she's been the best player in the playoffs, in my opinion. You know this. She's 6'9". She actually dunked last night, the first dunk in WNBA Finals history.
Taurasi off the double. Eddie into the game for Cunningham. Griner gets free and throws it down! Brittany Griner with the final slam here in game two.
But she's been fantastic. But when the game was really on the line, Diana Taurasi does what Diana Taurasi does. She became a killer and put the game away.
Yeah, I mean, Brittany Griner leading the team in scoring, dunking. Skylar Diggins-Smith, she had the overtime layup to seal this thing.
Here's Diggins-Smith. Diggins-Smith, the crossover, the attack, and the lay! What a breakdown from Skylar Diggins-Smith! It's a two-possession game!
But Diana Taurasi, you just mentioned LaChina. I mean, you're sitting next to Sue Bird, who knows Diana as well as anybody. Diana, by some accounting, is, you know, on the short list for greatest player of all time. What are you seeing from Diana right now? As, you know, she got off to a start that was slower because of this whole thing with, you know, oh yeah, right, her partner just gave birth before game one.
I think we're seeing the best of Diana Taurasi, to be honest, Pablo. Yes, Penny had just had a baby. Keeping in mind, they lost game one. They played game five of the semifinals on a Friday night. She takes a PJ home. Penny has the baby in the wee hours of Saturday morning. Phoenix doesn't even touch the floor as a team on Saturday. Sunday, the first time they're together on the floor is for the game one against Chicago. So they felt like they had more to give once they had a little rest and some energy in the tank. That was quite a stretch to kind of start these finals with. But Diana has also been nursing an ankle sprain / broken bone in her foot. So she's got a lot going on. She's not at 100%. And you can tell, like, there are definitely plays where you say, okay, 100% healthy Diana would have done this or that. And she's also 39 years old. However, there is not a more mentally tough player than Taurasi. Again, when the game is on the line and when the moment is at its brightest. I mean, she had 14 points in the fourth quarter in overtime and started overtime with a four-point play after nailing a three-point bucket and getting fouled. Yeah. I mean, there's just no other player in the world that you would really want the ball in their hands in these situations.
I have to ask, LaChina, because you're a sober-minded analyst. You've played the game, too. What is sitting next to Sue during all of this like as she is watching her friend go and do that?
Well, first, Sue's funny because what you'll catch her doing is passing. Like, she's sitting next to me, but you'll see her, like, throw her hands out every once in a while like she's passing the ball. It is the funniest thing. I'm like, I'm jumping. Like, are you okay? But she thinks she's, like, literally in the minds of these players. And
she's seeing
situations where she would be passing the ball. And she's literally doing that, physically sitting next to me. But her basketball knowledge is limitless. And, yeah, I do think she rides the wave with Diana some. You know, that's her best friend. And they've been in this together for a very long time. But she's given us some insight into Diana's mentality at different points in these playoffs that's been invaluable.
What are you expecting then, given all of this, from game three?
Oh, I expect Chicago to put on a show in game three. It's already a sold out crowd. I'm just so impressed with Chicago's fans, how they've poured into Wintrust Arena and given their team so much energy. The Candace Parker factor has been exactly what we thought it would be with her leadership and this team that has really no finals experience outside of her. It's a very talented and balanced team on paper. I mean, Kalia Copper is a bona fide star. And Courtney Vandersloot is playing some of the best basketball that we've maybe seen from a point guard in the history of this league. She had 20 points, 14 assists.
Wow.
And every time that Phoenix made a run, Courtney Vandersloot answered that run. And it was Sue Bird that made that observation. You know, it takes one great point guard to recognize another one. But what she's doing for that team right now in a leadership position, even the bucket she scored in regulation to get them to overtime, I mean, she's just been phenomenal. So I expect Chicago to really have a great bounce back game.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, so LaChina, I hate to put you on the spot here, but who do you think wins this thing in the end?
You know, Pablo, I wish I had an answer for you. I'm going to give you my canned analyst perspective right now. I don't know. And that's the absolute truth. You know, Phoenix is, to me, when they're clicking and they have healthy players on the floor, like, they're just such a well-oiled machine on the offensive end. But Chicago, you can say the same thing. I just believe it's going to be the team that makes the fewest mistakes. And I can't tell you right now who that's going to be. But I do know that there will be plenty of big moments down the stretch, whether it's Skylar Diggins-Smith, Brittany Griner, Kalia Copper, Candace Parker. We're seeing the WNBA at its finest in this moment. And I am thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying it.
No, it's a showcase, LaChina. And that's even before I knew that you and Sue Bird were playing your own game on the sideline. So once again, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
We need a Sue Cam, Pablo. So talk to ESPN about that. We need a Sue Cam.
Absolutely. LaChina and Sue, that's a buddy cop movie that we got to invest in, I think.
Thanks for having me, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Mike Philbrick, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Garrett Lang, Andre Soto, Julia Faust, Christian Gardner, Max Brodsky, and Jackson Udgelo. I'll talk to you Monday.